Hey, this is Carrie Peters.
And Stacey Morgenstern.
And welcome to Better Than Ever, a Health Coach Institute podcast.
Where we're here to question how we do life because the normal rules no longer apply.
Hello, Better Than Ever podcasters. Hannah Duncan here. As many of you already know, JJ Virgin will be teaching a half-day workshop at our live event, HCI Live Spark the Revolution, this November 9th through 11th in Dallas, Texas. In honor of her joining us for another event, the Better Than Ever podcast is featuring the first time she joined our tribe. Enjoy this exclusive sneak peek into the magic that is HCI Live.
So, without further ado, let's bring to the stage Ms. JJ Virgin.
Hi.
So, what if the biggest transformation you could give your clients, because you're all health coaches, right? Yes? Even if you're here, even if you're here for the first time learning, what are you now? Your health coach. I'm a health coach, and what I discovered, and I'm going to share with you, is that, and I want you to think about this question, what if the biggest transformation, the thing that made the biggest difference for all your health coaches, for all of your clients, had nothing to do really with health? Like, had nothing to do with diet, had nothing to do with exercise. You're all looking at me like, what? What are you talking about? So what I'm going to talk to you about today actually has nothing to do with these shows I've been on. I've been on Rachel Ray and Dr. Oz and The Doctors and The Today Show and all these different shows talking about health and nutrition. Anybody see any of these? Yes? Super fun. I feel so fortunate that I just happened the first time to be in the right place at the right time, and I actually managed to get words out and not fall or anything else. And then I did those four New York Times bestsellers. And that's like forward-facing. That's what people know about me. But, and you know, those are super, super cool to have done, and I feel very, honestly, very fortunate about all of that. But the thing that really I think of as my biggest accomplishment, any parents out here? Right? So there's the big accomplishment. Those guys. That was back when I actually could be near them and hug them when they were not teens. The little guy on top, that's Bryce. The bigger guy is Grant. And all the stuff that I'd done before, the shows and the books, lots of hard work, lots of no's, lots of failures all along the way, nearly bankrupt. I mean, my first book that they couldn't get the title right of, why not? Because no one bought it. Those TV shows, well, the TV shows you don't know about were the primetime pilot I got on ABC that I thought I'd finally made it that never aired, right? I mean, these things happen. But I always thought, you know what? I can totally deal with this as long as everything is okay with those guys, right? Right? So about 4 years ago, I was just getting ready to launch the Virgin Diet, and I knew I had something with that book. And all I did really was I took an elimination diet and I just made it kind of fun and sexy. Because in health, we tend to make everything super boring. This does not inspire people. So all I did was make it fun, easy to follow. And I got this really great book advance. I found an amazing agent, got a great book advance. And I put every dime from that book advance into marketing. And a little more. Actually, a lot more. I borrowed a bunch of money too. But I knew that this was going to work. I did a PBS special, so it was all lined up, all ready to go. And that afternoon, I'd just been working on some of the assets I needed for PBS, and I went home, and my older guy, Grant, who was then 16, was in a bad mood. And I come in the door, and he goes, I want to go to martial arts. Well, it turns out he'd left school that day because he had a headache. And now he's miraculously recovered. And I'm like, no, you can't go to martial arts because you were sick today, so you got to stay home. And this went back and forth and back and forth, and I held my ground. And the last thing he said to me was, Mom, I'm not as strong as you think I am. And he stomped out the door, barefoot, right around dusk. And I was like, oh. And Bryce walks out and he goes, God, what a jerk. And I go, I know. Right? And so I go into the garage. I had a little gym in there, and I was doing some burst training. And the next thing I know, Bryce comes running into the garage. He's 15, and he says, Mom, Grant's been hit by a car. And he's been airlifted to the local hospital. Now, you know, airlift, like, bad. This is bad. And we drive there, my ex-husband, my son, and I, and we have no idea what we're going to find out. This is the next thing I see. This actually is the cleaned up version. This is not what I saw. What I saw was my child with covered in road rash, glass sticking out of him, bones sticking out of him. And the doctors say to me, he's got a torn aorta. That kills 90% of the people right on the scene. That's what killed Lady Diana, Princess Diana. He had multiple brain bleeds. He was in a deep coma. He had something called diffuse axonal injuries. He had 13 fractures, including a crushed heel, broken femurs, broken elbow, broken wrist, skull fractures. And they said, listen, we can't fix his heart, his aorta, because if we fix his aorta, we have to use a blood thinner and his brain will bleed out. But if we don't fix his aorta, it's going to rupture sometime in the next 24 hours. So you need to say goodbye to your son. But he's on this table, he's got a ventilator, he's still there. And my other son, who's super smart, like super smart and a little cynical and sarcastic, and he walks to the doctor and he goes, well, so, because I said to him, I go, well wait a minute, because John, my ex-husband, asks, because he says, well, what would you do if it was your son? He goes, well, there is a hospital that can do this surgery without a blood thinner and a specific surgeon. And he goes, but he'll probably never survive the airlift. And even if he survived the airlift, probably won't survive that surgery. And even if he survived the surgery, the chance that he's going to be anywhere near normal, he's going to be so brain damaged, it wouldn't be worth it. I know, what a creepy doctor, right? I mean, I still... Anyway, my 15-year-old's listening to all this, and he goes, so like maybe a 0.25% chance? And the doctor says, yeah, it's about right, son. He goes, we'll take those odds. Yes. So we took those odds. We airlifted him there. We drove at 2 a.m. to L.A., no idea if we were picking up a body, what was going on. And we get there, amazing surgeon comes to greet me, and he says, I've got this. I do this all the time. I've had people thrown off overpasses, run over. He goes, don't worry. I'm like, all right. I went up to the waiting room. I wrote a blog post. I was like, I'm not going to worry. This is going to be fine. He comes in. He goes, okay, he's out. I fixed it. Now, I have no idea if he'll ever wake up. I'm just the plumber. I'm like, a lot of highs and lows going on. So now he's in the ICU. And I'm in the ICU with him, and I've got a problem. Because in a couple of weeks, this book is coming out. I have invested everything into this book and borrowed to do this. I've got a public television show coming out, and I am the sole financial support for my two kids. Just the airlift alone cost $80,000. And I have no idea at this point how much insurance is covering. And if you're a parent, it's like, I know that whatever it's going to take, I'm going to find. So I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at this book, and I'm thinking, wow, I got to make this book now really work. Like, not just a little bit. This thing has to hit big. But I have to be here, too, because the third leading cause of death is death by doctor. It's the hospital. I'm not leaving. I'm staying there. But I also have to launch this book. And I was there, like I'd get there between 5:30 and 6 in the morning. I'd leave at 9 at night. I literally got into being like, people said, you must be superwoman. I'm like, well, I came in super healthy. But actually, it was even bigger than that. Because, I mean, first of all, you have to be super healthy. You can't be sick and go into the ICU. You're wearing a glove and masks and all that. But what really had done this for me, and what really made me able to take this on, was the fact that I'd gone through a lot of crap in my life. Anyone here gone through a lot of crap? Awesome! Because it makes you be able to handle these things, and that's what this study showed. This study showed that people who'd gone through stuff, not like extreme, but not those people who'd had that easy life, the people who've gone through adversity, who've struggled, who had the show canceled, who had the divorce, who was nearly bankrupt, all those things are awesome. They're training. You know that if it doesn't kill us, makes it stronger? That's what that study found. That study found that people who've gone through this are actually happier, more successful, better able to function at life. And once I realized that, because I looked back after all of this, 4.5 months later when I got out of the hospital with Grant, we started the real heavy lifting. And I was at an event kind of like this, and I was around some friends. They go, how did you do that? And I go, I have no idea. I just was nose down. This is what I had to do. Like, I wasn't thinking. I was in complete autopilot of save my son, make this book go. And by the way, if something wasn't saving my son or making this book go or making me stay healthy, I didn't do it. All the other stuff fell by the wayside. Imagine if you did that in your life. Because I'm normally not like that. It's like there's, ooh, a squirrel. You know, it's like all sorts of stuff, right? But I just got super essential. And that's all I did. I practiced extreme self-care. I took amazing care of myself. I burst on the hospital stairs. Whole Foods was delivering to the hospital. I was getting 8 hours of sleep. I did all of that stuff. But then I got super essential. But when I looked back and people were saying, how did you do that? And I started to realize that everything I'd gone through in my life had been training for this day. I also realized that this can be learned. That actually, resilience is a muscle. And you don't have to go through what I went through in order to get better at all of this. And once I learned that, I realized I had to share it. So my next book is called The Miracle Mindset. And it's actually set up as a memoir, but the real tagline is show up, step up, you're stronger than you think, all built around the fact that you can learn this, and I build the lessons into it. So the first thing you have to do when you're going to learn something is know your starting point. So I'm going to make a deal with you. You ready? I'm going to pass out this scorecard so you can see where you are, but you can't do it now. Do you promise? Otherwise, I'm going to tell them stop. Okay. Because I know what's going to happen. They're going, we're going to pass it out now. I go, then they'll look down. They won't pay attention. So you're not going to do that, right? Okay, if you catch your neighbor doing that, what are you going to do? Take their pen away. So, all right, break it up. Break it up. You've already blown your promise. Okay, eyes back up here. I can see you. Settle. So I'm working with a business coach, Dan Sullivan, and he creates scorecards for all sorts of things. And as I was going through this and working on these lessons, because everything I do, if someone's coming to me for a weight loss program, I'm going to look at their blood sugar, I'm going to look at their waist measurements, I'm looking at their weight, and I was like, I've got to be able to quantify this. But mindset's so, it's so subjective. So this is going to give you an objective way to really go through and go, how am I doing in all of these areas? Because as I looked back, and I started to interview a bunch of my friends who'd also achieved, like, they're successful, they're making an impact in the world, but as I started to go through all these people who I admire, I realized they'd all gone through stuff. And we all had these things in common. We had these different traits, these different mindsets that collectively form this miracle mindset that you can learn. So what I want you to do when you go through this at lunch, not now, is be super honest with yourself as you go through this. Because while I believe in strengthening strength, and you're going to see things that you're really good at, I also see the opportunity of areas that you might have challenges with. So they're forgiveness, abundance-minded, resilience, action-taker, lives in the present, collaborative, and courageous. And I'll share with you that forgiveness and living in the presence were my two Achilles heels that I struggled with a bunch. Now, I'm taking a group of people through this right now, and what we've seen is as you start to identify these things, you'll see them show up as blocks in your life everywhere. But once you're aware of that, there's lessons that you can do to break through it. And when your mindset up levels, guess what? Everything up levels. Because ultimately, no matter what you want to do in your life, you cannot outrun, you can't outgrow your mindset. In fact, we did a survey to my list, to my community, to find out if you hadn't been successful in your health program, what was going on? And do you know what they said their number one reason for not being successful was? It wasn't that they had a food craving or maybe an unsupportive spouse. It was because they didn't feel worthy. So this is one that when you get this and you take this to your clients, it will shift everything for you. Now, one of my first mentors when I was 30 said this line to me, and I just loved it. It was, "Don't wish it was easier, make yourself stronger." And I remember standing in that ICU looking at this going, oh my gosh, you know, now what do I do? But that line kept coming back to me. When we brought Grant home, it has not been easy. I don't know if anyone's ever been around someone with a brain injury, anybody? So all they told me at the hospital was that it was going to be ugly when he woke up. They didn't tell me that that could be for years. Because when people come out of brain injuries, they go through major issues with impulse control, anger, depression, suicide. It's brutal. And one of the things that I've had to do with Grant is not coddle him. And I got to tell you, when your son almost dies by being hit by a car, the first time he started to walk out into the street when he came home, I actually jumped him. Like, you know. And he's like, "Mom!" You know. But it's like I had such bad PTSD about this. I was watching a movie a couple months ago, and I had two friends. I had friends sitting on either side of me, and a kid in the movie almost gets hit by a car, and I jumped right out of my chair. You know, still right there. But I know that I can't coddle him through life. So he'll call me up and say, "Hey, will you remind me about some of these appointments I have?" And I go, "No, I can't do that. You have to use your phone. You have to do this stuff." And he'll grumble, and he's like, I can't do that, I'm upset. I go, "Do not wish it was easier, baby. You had to step up to this challenge. Not easy to do. I want to instead take care of him." But think about that with clients. If you do it for them, what happens? You just handicapped them, right? So look at this. You know, I think we have this tendency now. It's like there's this idea out here that we should be fearless. I don't think so. I think we should be courageous. And we should lean into it. A little bit of a fear, great. It's going to make you stronger every single time you do it. Now, when Grant had all of his injuries, and it was interesting because the first thing that happened, you know, he's in a coma and he's got this torn aorta. So the first thing is fix the torn aorta. I did exactly like whatever's in front, fix that, because once he's alive, we can go back and fix the other things. And it was interesting because the doctor who fixed his torn aorta, in order for this to happen, so he was the only guy in California who could do it. They had to get a hold of him. Now it's midnight. They had to convince him to take the case. And once a hospital is convinced they take the case, the other hospital relinquishes it. So he had to convince his hospital to take this and assemble the team of an orthopedic surgeon, critical care, trauma, pediatric, neurosurgeons. He had to assemble all these people. Now it's 2 a.m. Then he had to get the stent to put in. Well, the stent he wanted to use was part of a clinical trial and it was no longer available. It had been shipped out 2 weeks before. He had to find it. Now it's 3 a.m. And by the way, it's not supposed to be used in children. He said, "I figured I'd ask for forgiveness later." I'm like, good one. You know, it's like amazing. So once that, he saved his life there, now my next focus was getting him to wake up from this coma. He had all of these, literally, he had rods put into his femurs, he had this crushed heel with pins sticking out of it, and it's funny, because I remember a year earlier, my younger son had broken his knee, and I thought, it was the worst thing ever, and now I'm looking at all these things, broken bones, like, big deal, you know? But then I found out that this crushed heel is actually one of the worst things that you can do. It's a game changer. And all the doctors kept telling me is, we're just trying to get him to be able to walk again. He literally had pins sticking out, like these big screw pins sticking out of his heel with open wounds. And they were trying to hang his heel so it could heal. It was just absolutely gross. Plus, he's got a brain injury. We had to put diapers on his hands so we wouldn't mess with it because he didn't understand what was going on. And the doctors came in. And I'm looking at them, and I said, okay, what's going on here with this heel? Because we can't have him with this leg hanging with this pin sticking out. Like, what can we do? He goes, we're just trying to get him to be able to walk again. And I said, you know what? Here's the deal. He's an athlete. He's not just going to walk again. He's going to be running. He's going to be playing tennis. So I want you to think about what would happen if Kobe Bryant were here and do that. Yeah. You know, I truly believe you get what you expect. And early on, I told Grant and everybody else around me that he was going to be better than ever. He was going to be 110%. And they all kind of thought I was crazy there. But think about how different the hospital staff acted when that was your belief, right? Versus then we're just trying to keep him alive. We're just trying to see if he can walk again. Nope, that wasn't it. We never went with that. So critical. Now, with the virgin diet, I always wonder if the book would have been as big of a success if I'd had a choice. Think about it. What if success was not optional? Because so many people, I come from the diet world, so what do people tell you? They'll tell you, I'll try that. Do you know what I'll try that means? I'm going to go eat the cake. That's what that means. I'll try for 5 minutes and then a cookie will show up and I'm not trying anymore. And so think about making something so critical that it's not optional. And that means putting a big enough why behind it. My favorite philosopher of all time. It's the don't try, right? Just do. Just do, because in reality, we are never better than when we are challenged. When do you grow? Do you grow when it's just beautiful outside and everybody loves you and you're having a really good hair day? Is that the day you grow? Not the day you grow. You grow when things are tough and you stand up. You get knocked down and you get back up. I always feel like that song that, you know, I get knocked down. That's my song. That's like my theme song. But that's when we get better, right? When we're challenged. I use this a lot in when I'm doing weight loss coaching, the idea of little hinges swing big doors, because I do a lot with food swaps. But I use this with Grant all along the way, because my decision early on, again, I stood that morning in the hospital. After he'd had surgery, it was about 8 a.m., I got to go into the ICU to see him, and I'm standing in the ICU looking at him, and it is a dismal scene in the pediatric, this was the adult ICU at Harbor UCLA. People are handcuffed to their beds. There's gunshot wounds. It's a bad place. And he's in the corner, and I'm looking at him, and he is in a deep coma. And I'm like, you are going to be 110%. This is going to be the best thing that ever happened to you. Right? That's it. And that was my whole, that's how I went from then forward. Grant wakes up. Now, I thought that when he woke up out of the coma, it would be like the movies that I've seen. Right? He wakes up, he looks at me, I love you, and it's all good. That is not what happens. Not what happens. And he wakes up and he stares off into space and he does this for days. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, because I have no idea. Was that's it, you know? And I just started doing everything I could think of. I snuck in little suckers to see if he could taste. I brought in essential oils. I brought in music. I did everything I could to wake up all of his senses, and I would look for any clue that he was getting better, and I would celebrate those small wins. And every single one, to me, I was just adding up to get to 110%. When we went to start to get him to walk, because of that heel, he'd been bedridden and then in a wheelchair for 3 months. And now he has to start to walk. And the way we got him to start walking was literally first to just stand by a walker and stand up and then sit back down. And then we'd have him stand up for a little while longer. We'd put little things up on a tray that he could play with. and he'd play with them for literally like 30 seconds, and he'd have to sit back down. We kept doing this and doing this and doing this till finally we got him onto a walker and walking, and then we started to be able to pull the walker away. But this took a good month to do. Now, I believe that the single most powerful way that we can be is together. I think one of the most challenging things we're facing out in the world is the lack of community and connection. It's one of the biggest challenges Grant's faced. And since he's come home, you know, he was a junior in high school when this happened. He came home midway through the school year. Well, there was nowhere for him to go, right? He couldn't really go back to school. He actually tried. And when he went back to school, one of the kids said, "You didn't get into a car accident. You're just stupid." Said that. I was like, "Who said that?" You know? Like, we're not telling you, Mom. But he was really depressed. So what I decided to do was to take him back to the hospital that we'd gone to last, because we were at Harbor UCLA. Then we went to Children's Hospital for 2 months. And we went at Christmas time. We got a whole bunch of gifts. And we gave out presents to the kids there. And, you know, when I was there during Christmas time the year before, I kept thinking, I drive out into LA traffic and I think all these people need to go into this hospital and spend a couple hours here and they'll stop all this nonsense, all this worrying about these little things, fighting over sales sweaters, all this ridiculous stuff that goes up here that doesn't matter whatsoever. So I bring him up there and he's starting to talk to people about his experience and he's seeing the impact he's having on them and how people are starting to become hopeful. And there was one girl there, she was 16. She was there from Guam, because Children's Hospital will take you no matter what. Her parents had gotten her there because she just lost her other brother 3 months earlier, and they discovered she had leukemia too when they were tapping her to see if she could be a bone marrow transplant donor. And they find out she has it too. So these poor parents, their son dies, they're now here, Children's with their daughter. They've got three more kids at home in Guam. They're staying at Ronald McDonald House. And Grant's talking to the girl, and I'm hearing this whole story, and I'm thinking to myself, I've got airline miles, right? I know what I'll do. So I go up to the mom, I go, "Listen, I got a bunch of airline miles. I'm gonna fly your daughters in so they can have Christmas with their sister." She goes, "You can't do that." I'm like, "Of course I can do this. This will be great." I call up American Airlines. They don't fly to Guam or from Guam to there. They're just like, and it turns out I didn't even know where Guam was. I would totally fail that. Like, are you smarter than a fifth grader? Fail. But it's really expensive to fly people from Guam to LA. But I'd already committed to this. And heck, I had already faced what I faced with everything else, you know. I mean, like, if I could pull off getting a New York Times bestseller in the hospital and all the financial issues of that, I'm sure I can fly three kids from Guam. So that, I will tell you, was one of the most significant things that we did as a family, was bringing those daughters in and seeing them all get together. And that was so great for Grant to see too, because it helps him, you know, when you go out there and do things for others and when you collaborate, when you help rise other people up, it helps you get out of your own way. Like, if you're having a pity party, here's the easiest thing to do is go help some other people. Now, as we were going along, there was no roadmap for this. Every brain injury is different. I had no idea what I was facing. I just knew that I was going to stay in forward motion. One of my girlfriends, Lisa Sasevich, calls it taking imperfect action. So when he was in the hospital, like I told you, I would do all sorts of things like suckers, and I brought balls in, and I was bringing, I had Nutribullet in there, I was giving him smoothies. But I kept pushing him a little bit farther than the hospital let us push him. And we were allowed to take him on these little furloughs and bring him out of the hospital. And they had a really cool therapy pool at the hospital, but they would not let us use it. So we took him and put him in a swimming pool and watched him swim perfectly and brought this video back to show them. Because they were still limiting him, and we knew we just had to keep pushing forward, and like, what's the worst that could happen, right? And I think for so many of us, and I just heard this in the group that I'm working with, they were afraid to take action because they didn't have it perfect yet. I'm creating this Miracle Mindset Academy right now with the group. We're co-creating it. it will never be perfect. There's nothing I have that I've ever created that's ever been perfect. Even if you have a million editors look at a book, there's still going to be a typo, there's still going to be problems. You just got to get into action and correct it as you go. And then ask for forgiveness, right? So I told you on the scorecard, one of the biggest challenges I had was with forgiveness. Fortunately, one of my best friends is Dave Asprey from Bulletproof. And Dave said a couple years ago, because I'd done the New York Times bestsellers, I'd done all this success, and I kept reaching for more goals, and I felt nothing. No joy, no happiness. I didn't feel bad, and I didn't feel good. I just felt here, and I didn't know what to do about it. And he brought me to this thing called 40 Years of Zen, where we all stuck electrodes on our head, and we were in this place for 12 hours a day. He didn't tell me what I was going into until I got there. And you can't have coffee, which he also didn't tell me. But what I learned from that was, and he didn't tell me what we were doing. What we were doing was forgiveness protocols with electrodes to tell you if you were actually able to forgive the person or not, or if you were cheating. And I went through forgiveness protocols for 7 days, and as we started to go in them, I thought, gosh, I'm going to be here for like years, you know? But the biggest person that I had to forgive was who? Right? But you know, when you do that, you start to feel the joy again. It starts to set you free. It's probably the most powerful thing, gratitude and forgiveness. Those are the two most powerful things that you can ever do. So I have to wrap up, but I just want to share with you what's happened since, because this is one of Grant's art pieces. Now, my son was never an artist, and it's just been something that's come out of him since, and I'm not going to tell you it's been all sunshine and butterflies since. There are some really tough times, and there's some really amazing times. This last 4 years have been the hardest 4 years of my life and the best 4 years of my life by far. We're all better because of it. In some ways, he's 110%. There's some parts of his life that he's better than ever. So I just want to leave you with this question and think about, what would you do if you were stronger than you think? Thank you. Hey.
Like what you hear? Experience a half-day workshop taught by JJ Virgin at HCI Live Spark the Revolution this November 9th through 11th in Dallas, Texas. Go to www.hcilive.com/Dallas to secure your seat today. Thanks for tuning in to Better Than Ever, a Health Coach Institute podcast. For more information on our programs, please go to www.healthcoachinstitute.com. Comment and share if you like what you hear.